Hi, everybody. My name is Wayne, and I'm going to get this taken care of. Yes. And yeah, I'm your Al-Anon speaker tonight. And the reason I was asked, hiya. The reason I was asked is that I nearly died of this deadly disease that nobody has ever bothered to name. A deadly disease that dare not speak its name. It's the Al-Anon family disease, Al-Anonianism, but no name. It's so Al-Anon. And when I came in here ages ago, in the dark ages, I had a sexuality that back then did not dare to speak its name. Does this all start sounding familiar? So I had a double whammy, and I barely survived. When I came in here, I was dead. Now, on the surface, everything looked okay, fine. I was sort of the poster child for white, male, straight privilege. But it was all based on lies, except for the white part. But I'd have lied about that too. But I worked in public relations. I got paid to lie, and I was good at it. And I've never made so much money since then because, you know, there are no cash and prizes in Al-Anon recovery. I was also married, had children, a house in New England, all that stuff. And I followed a rich family tradition of having male lovers and a very complex life, multiple lives. I didn't see any problem with that. But I also, at that time, I had a very fancy job. And actually, lots of diplomatic liquor and gave parties. I was quite wonderful, except it was just a nest of vipers. It was like Mad Men, you know? Everybody had bars in their office. It was quite amazing. I also had this very fancy education, which looked awfully good, except I never, in that whole fancy education, learned anything about how to live. So all I was left with, and it was something that explained everything to me, was despair. And it nearly took me down. So that's what brought me into these rooms, the rooms of Al-Anon. And it saved my life. And so what I want to talk about tonight is I want to talk about the 12 steps. That's what saved my life. The fellowship saved my life. But I want to talk about now there's a timer here, so I'm going to talk fast, and I talk fast normally, so I'm going to talk even faster. But I just want to go through the steps, and I want to talk about the new stuff that I've learned recently. Now, maybe you guys already knew this. I'm slow, but I'm just learning this new stuff. So let's go through the steps. Number one, let's take a pause. I never have to be that isolated, desperate, dead, and lost in the stars again because you're here. You saved my life. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And I just think, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, for me, vagueness is the sign that I'm right in my disease. I am powerless over alcohol or something else, but I've got to know what I'm powerless over. The great God, alcohol, the great remover. It removes people, it removes dignity, it removes trust, it removes the finish on my coffee table. Alcohol. So I need to know what I'm powerless over. And I hear some people in Al-Anon, like 10, 15 years, saying, I still can't find a relationship. Do you think it had something to do with the alcoholic past? Yes. It's step one. And it's not just Al-Anonians. In AA, I've heard people say, like with 25 years, say, oh, I just realized that the reason I was in the gutter was, I drank. Yes. Yes, this is a cunning disease. Let's face it. The other thing I've noticed, I've got to keep moving here. The other thing I've noticed about step one that I had never noticed till last fall was that it's about cause and effect. Powerless over alcohol, lives unmanageable. Now, the world of alcoholism is not about cause and effect. This is the world of recovery. I can take an action and expect a result. It's so much a calmer world. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. No mention of God yet, because people forget that. A power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. A friend of mine who was in the program, she had like 48 years. She died a couple of years ago. Her name was Patricia. And she would always say, I've studied alcoholism, alcoholics, and the common denominator is that, she said, the alcoholic doesn't know how to calm or soothe himself or herself. And so the alcoholic wants to crawl out of his own skin. And I would add to that, the Al-Anonic wants to crawl into somebody else's skin. But that's the dynamic. I came in here, I was 38, I thought I was mature, I was an adult. The truth was, I was a desperate child, and I was just flailing. And I came in here, and you held me. That was the power greater. You just held me. And it took me a while to settle down. And I then started noticing those stupid slogans, you know, day at a time, you know, easy does it, all that stuff. That was my first exposure to sanity. I'm convinced of that. So I settled down, and I began to learn that sanity is not a state of mind. Sanity is a place. And I settled into that place like a child being held by you. That takes us right to step three. And, you know, I've got to tell you, on all of these steps, I fight with every word. I've struggled and, you know, what's wrong with that one? And I have to understand this one. So made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. But a lot in there to wrestle with. But last winter, I was at a meeting. I was just sitting under one of the banners, and I just looked up and saw step three differently. It just means, to me, decided I would allow myself to be taken care of. In all that these years, I've never made that decision to be taken care of. And I didn't have to wrestle with what turning over was. I just got it, I think. And I hadn't gotten it before. I also, here we are with the God thing. So lots of room to wrestle with that. I used to think Bill W. was such a nudge. He could have mentioned it once, but he kept coming back to it. I heard something in a meeting that just a random comment. Somebody said, you know, to mention the word God in a sentence opens the sentence. It opens the thinking. You're not alone. How do I relate to other people? How do I relate to my world? How do I relate to meaning? So we'll come back to that. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, I had a great time with this one because I wrote, I think it was three step fours. They're like Russian novels. They were wonderful. I had a lot to work with because I wasn't wanted. I was the little abortion who could. I was hated. I was illegitimate, of course. I came into a family that was just filled with coldness and secrets and lies and quite a place. And also some sexual abuse. So I had a lot of material. And I kept doing these fourth steps, and they got darker and darker and darker. So I went back to the fourth step, and I looked. And you know, I thought of myself as a very sophisticated person. And there was a word in there that I didn't feel I needed. It was the word moral. Moral. I'd never thought about it before. What did I get right, and what did I get wrong? Not good or bad or sinner or saint. What did I get right? I get right. And what did I get wrong? I'm not a victim. My four steps got a lot simpler and shorter after that. They were a real inventory. So on to step five. And I've had a group of men who meet in my living room. We've met for the last 10 or 12 years. And we just read voraciously and discuss lots of stuff, every book we can get our hands on. So we've read the big book and OA literature and Al-Anon literature and discussed it. And then we tackled the Blueprint for Progress. I don't know how many of you know it. It's it's the step four inventory. And it took us over 2 years. We answered all the questions. We got to know ourselves, and we got to know each other very well. And, well, so had we done a fifth step? The answer was no, because one of the members said, well, exact nature of our wrongs. Why don't we each take a 3x5 card and just write down maybe 4 or 5 points? It's the hardest thing I ever did. Because, well, for one thing that wasn't on the card, but about truth, about honesty, I didn't know it was a thing. I thought it was a social convention. No. Honesty is, it's real. And it changes everything. So I learned that. But here were the 5 things I put on my card. It's embarrassing, but, you know, this is where it was. The first thing, I didn't believe in love. I had never seen it. I'd never seen it modeled. I read about it in books. I thought I was all fantasy. It was all made up. I just didn't believe in it. After the fifth step, I actually noticed that there were one or two people in the world I had a certain feeling for, and it turned out to be love, but I couldn't label it. I just didn't know. Then the second thing was I didn't trust life or God or higher power. I wasn't afraid exactly, but I thought it was a vicious place. Well, that had been my experience. I thought I could trust my mind. I could use reason and figure things out. Not a good idea. The fourth thing was I thought for me to engage with life, I had to judge. I judged me, I judged you, and that was meant we had a relationship. And then the fifth thing, which I shared with many of the other people in the group, was that I wasn't important, you know? So I was gay, so what? I didn't have to act on that. So, you know, I didn't have no idea what I wanted. I wasn't important. So those were the 5 things. Now, I'd had a very fancy psychiatrist at one point who helped me with this inadvertently. I'd read about this way that you mapped the family dynamic. It was a Jungian process. Oh. So I came into him one day. I had mapped the family process. And the poor man listened to me. And then he just dropped his beads. He said, nobody could make a healthy life out of that. After all those hours and all that money. But that's the fifth step. I had these things that I'd really profoundly gotten wrong, and me with my willpower and determination, I was trying to make a life out of that. Nobody could make a healthy life out of that. So by the time I got to step 6, which I'd wrestled with, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these, the words were such a problem, until I did that fifth step. And then I saw these patterns everywhere. It just drove me nuts. I couldn't stand it. That was my 6th step. So, on to 7. Humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And, I, you know, we spend a lot of time acting as if we don't speak English. You know, what does humbly mean? You know, I had been an arrogant asshole for 40 years, and I never bothered to ask what arrogant meant. So, humbly, piece of cake, it's just the opposite. So, humbly asked. And that's the verb, which I'd always skipped over. Ask. I'll ask, what did you ask for today from the world? What did you ask for? Well, I try to keep this one day at a time. What did I ask for? What do I ask for? Nothing. So I've been trying an experiment for the last 2 years, and it's been quite life-changing. I ask, life, whatever, I ask for stuff. I do my little prayers of gratitude in the morning, and then I ask for stuff. I ask for a big one, fun, laughter, lightness of spirit. For an Alanonian boy, I need that. Number two, I'm old. I ask for health, energy, vitality, and I like ask to be safe as I go through my day. Third thing, stuff, something I've always wanted. I want love and warmth and kindness, and I want to be a source of love and warmth and kindness. I live in New York. You live in San Francisco. You get this one. I ask for abundance because it's expensive up there. I ask for abundance, and I ask for richness of experience. I ask that I will be generous with my time, with myself, with my skills and abilities. Next thing, I love to learn, and so I ask to learn. I ask to understand stuff. I ask to get clarity. And I ask for thoughts and ideas to come through me. Now, some of them I check out later. They're a little wobbly. But I ask for them. And something else I ask for. I ask for beauty. Just to notice it, to stop, to take it in. Beauty, it changes everything. I ask for an open heart, an open mind, and it feels a little risky, but I invite life into my life. And the more open, the more I surrender to life, the more I'm taken care of. Almost done. The next thing I asked for is to be renewed, restored in everything, in all my cells, in my all these billions of neurons, my DNA, my immune system, chemistry, and I ask those old, those damaged places, those old wounds, I ask those to keep healing. And then, so everything in me is focused on fullness of life. Then the last thing I ask for, because I was at a point when I came in that I was willing to throw all of this away. So I ask to be thrilled by consciousness, because we've got this miracle going on here. Right so close we just can't see it and take it for granted. Nobody can explain it. Consciousness, and I can be conscious of myself. And you have consciousness. I ask to be thrilled by that. So, that's what I ask for in the morning. It takes a while. And but I'm not stupid. You notice I don't ask for something that I'm not going to get that day. So, at the end of the day, I do a little prayers of gratitude, and then I go over the list. I got everything. But if I hadn't asked, I wouldn't have noticed. This is the big shift. Humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. You know, we're really good in here of knowing what that step four and step five me was, that arrogant, that raging, that egotistical me, you know, selfish, self-centered, self-righteous. We got all those words. What does a healthy self look like? Because I'm asking for a healthy life here in step seven. Where am I too small? Where do I fail to thrive? Whole new world. That gets us to eight. Now, you notice eight. Oh, 20 minutes, thank you. Gets us to 8. And you'll notice how late it is in this process. I have to have found a new self, a healthy self, before I can deal with the past. Because I can't change the past. And that old me, I would have explained it away. I'd have tried to make you excuse what I'd done. Facing the past, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Okay. I learned a long time ago, this isn't a new thought, I learned that I had caused more harm by trying not to hurt people. I wasn't honest, of course. I didn't share who I was. I didn't show up. I manipulated. I used charm, all that stuff. I harmed people. Hurt just happens, but harm's a different thing. It's a permanent injury, permanent damage. So I learned about something else about that when my daughter came to visit a few years ago. And we had one of those late night chats, you know. And she said, Dad, I would really like you to explain how you've changed so much. You used to be such a monster. I guess I was kind of flattered that I'd changed, but... And let me mention that she spent many, 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 many years being a teenage girl. And... anyway, but that's hers. That's hers. But I was a monster, and what I hadn't realized until that point was that I was having my process. I was suffering, and I was dealing with all of this inner stuff, and I thought I was just handling the world outside fine. It was spilling out all over. I was a monster. And so when I look at this list, it comes as a shock to realize that I look at all the people on that list. If I was able to harm them, I never really believed they were as real as I was. I was, you know, they were just other people, you know. I'd never really noticed other people. That was step 8 for me. Then comes step 9. And I have to start using my imagination for something other than myself, to actually notice another human being, to imagine what's going on in another human being. That's why the amends have to be direct. I have to stand face to face with the person and see they are real. They are just as real as I am. And the amends that I have to offer them are what I would expect somebody to offer me. I'm real. I deserve a certain quality of amends, so do they. And I used to kind of dismiss, except to when to do so would injure them or others. Well, wait a minute. With my well-meaning amends, I can actually injure another human being if I realize that it's a real human being. Not only can I injure somebody, there's a third party. I could injure them too. All of these people are just as real as I am. Big revelation. So it's all about, for me, step 9 is about ownership. My past and who I am and ownership, just ownership of myself in relationship to other human beings. Now we're on to step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Continued. Don't quit. That's one of the best things I've ever done, is not quitting. Because I thought I'd... There were long periods when I thought, oh, I've heard all of this before. I hadn't. It's going to become different when my ears open. And also, these steps, they work at all different stages of life. They're just amazing. There's another word in the 10th step that helps me understand a little bit about my higher power. The word is promptly. When I'm wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, it teaches me something that is absolutely, definitely, certainly incontrovertible about my higher power. My higher power is going to kill me. Now that pisses me off, and I think it's a big mistake. It's probably an improvement in the world, but I have no idea. But my higher power is going to do that, and so is yours. So promptly, there's a certain urgency here. If I'm getting stuff wrong, if I'm going off the wrong direction, there's no time to waste. Promptly admit it. So we're on to step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God. Praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Will and power. Knowledge and power at the end. That's a big ask. So I attacked that step. What is prayer and what is meditation? You know, got very serious. I can be quite intense. I really got into that. But I'm slowly realizing that another way of looking at that step is, as long as there have been human beings, we human beings have used prayer and meditation to try to understand our gods, you know, just to open up to what's going on, to meaning. So maybe in step 11, I can just open up to being part of the great human experiment. Together, I can look at everything that human beings have learned along the way. And I can also, it's nature, it's everywhere. God. But I can build, I can be part of this great human experiment. It's a much easier way to do it. And I can find a practice that works for me and use it. Now, I said we get around to the higher power thing. Okay, here's where I am now with the God of my understanding. And I may change in 2 weeks, but this has been the hypothesis for the last few years. My understanding is that I live in God. There's no separation. I live in God. I live in reality as much as I can perceive it. What if God is reality? And the deal is just to go with it, to align myself with reality instead of fighting it. Makes a certain amount of sense. And I'm asking for knowledge and power at the end of this, knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. I better be very closely aligned, because you know what happened to Adam and Eve. That didn't work so well. So I have to stay very close. This takes us to the big finish, the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Pause. In my life, I've had the privilege of knowing a lot of very spiritual people, and I wasn't terribly fond of many of them. I kind of thought they were a pain in the ass, most of them. And also, I'm a gay man, and I have been for a long time. So way back, a lot of those spiritual people have not been my friends. So I look at this wording and I think, not sure I want to be spiritual. So I looked at it again. As a result of these steps, my spirit wakes up. Bingo. I understand that. My spirit was dead when I came in here, and my spirit has been waking up ever since. I know what my spirit is. There's nothing abstract about it, no great formula. I know what my spirit is. I watch people week after week walk through those doors, and they're just as benighted and twisted by pain, and they can hardly move the way I was. And I watch the light come on. The spirit wakes up. So my spirit wakes up, and I try to carry the message to others. Or to other alcoholics in AA. I make an effort. You know, so much of the writing about this carrying the message is like an infomercial for very serious service and all sorts of having 3,000 sponsees and, you know, all of that. You know, And also I get guilted. If I don't carry the message, I'm going to lose it. I don't believe that. If my spirit is awake, there is no way I'm not going to carry the message. The message carries itself. The last thing, practice these principles in all our affairs. What's all our affairs? That sounds very Sunday school to me. And it also sounds a little grand. And I'm suspicious of those things. All of our, 10 minutes. I can relax. all our affairs, you know, how to put it? In all our affairs, I think the big things take care of themselves. That's been my experience. All our affairs are those little tiny moments of reality. That's all our affairs. Like when I ask, what was the best thing that happened to me today? It's usually some tiny, exquisite encounter with another human being. It even happens on the New York subway. I was standing with a guy at one point, and he was wearing these green shoes with red and white snakes down the front. Now, I'm careful in the subway. I try to keep a neutral face, you know, nothing creepy, but still open and pleasant. So I was about to get off. I was right at the door, and so I just said to him, "Great shoes." And he said, "Oh, they're Prada. Thank you." This will kill you. My wife gave them to me. Sure. And I just said to him, "You're a lucky man." And I left. But I remember that moment. And another moment, just before I was coming here last week, in all our affairs, near me is a little store that makes fresh pasta. And if they don't have it ready, they make it for you per order, and it's cheap. I love it. The lady who works there is named Ashley. I love Ashley. Well, Ashley is a substantial lady. She's from the Bronx, and she has the braids, but she is so warm, and she's just filled with life, light. And I watch her take that big thing of pasta and hack it around and roll it and slice it and then squirts it out, and it's pasta chitara. And sometimes she'll tell me that it's humid today, you're going to have to go home and come back in an hour, I'm going to have to hang this up to dry. One of those urban moments that is so rich, so human, so magnificent. I just love it. So I had one of those moments last week. And then as I was walking away, knowing I was coming here to speak, I thought, you know, this is the man who was nearly dead. And the odds of my ever being able to take in a moment like that were zero. All my affairs, those things happen every day because of your love and because of these incredible steps. So that was a lot to throw at you. Thank you for listening. I wanted to talk about those steps. So thank you very much for listening. I hope something I said was of use to somebody. And thank you very much. You're great.